Right, good morning to you. How are you? It's a lovely Sunday morning here in Manchester, in the northwest of England. It's the 24th of September 2017. This is Sunday View with myself, Richie Allen. Hope your weekend has been good so far. This programme, of course, is where I take a look at the front pages of the national broadsheet and tabloid newspapers, look at what they are saying this Sunday, and maybe go beyond the headlines, as well as taking a look at one or two stories inside the papers as well. This is Sunday View. How are you? You're welcome to it. Let's get it on.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
And you can tweet the program. You know how to tweet the program now. You need only tweet at Richie Allen Show. Tell me what you're thinking about these big stories. I look forward to hearing from you on your Sunday View, broadcasting on davidicke.com.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Indeed it is, indeed it is. Right, you can email me as well. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk. Twitter is quicker, but you can email me as well. As usual, keep davidicke.com/headlines open. Much of what I talk about is covered in great depth and great detail on davidicke.com/headlines. This program is, of course, live right now, as well as davidicke.com. It's live on fabradiointernational.com, channel 2. We are Fab 2, and we're live on TuneIn Radio as well. All very dramatic, eh? Well, right, let's crack on then. First things first, I want to say a big thanks to Jamie Icke for Jamie Icke's Friday Night, which broadcast its second episode last Friday, a couple of days ago. Jamie had a magnificent conversation. Magnificent in every sense of the word. Thought-provoking, deep, important, with a wonderful man called Alan Park, who is a comedian and actor from Canada who has been treating himself with cannabis oil after getting a diagnosis of terminal prostate cancer. Wonderful stuff. That's on Podomatic.com, The Richie Allen Show. It's also on the David Icke YouTube channel as well now, if you missed that. And every month, Jamie's going to drop in on a Friday once a month to do that sort of programme, where he'll pick somebody whom he wants to talk to and then open the phone lines afterwards. I enjoyed it very much. I'm looking forward to the next one. Thanks to Jamie Icke. Now, moving on swiftly. There's a lot I want to get through today. We do this live, of course, at 11 o'clock in the morning, in the AM, on Sundays. Yeah, so remember, it's live. If you're listening to it later on, if you're listening to the podcast, it's live. So we're doing the papers. Things do happen after we present this program. It's spooky. People think, well, why didn't he cover that? Anyway, we're live now. It's 3 minutes past 11, Sunday morning, the 24th of September, and it looks like a very nice morning outside the window of our studio. Germans, the Germans, as Michael Shrimpton might call them, the Germans, have gone to the polls today to elect their new chancellor. Angela Merkel is widely expected to win, although you never know, and secure a fourth term as chancellor. If she does win, Merkel, it means she will serve 16 years in total as the chancellor. And without labouring the point, we've said it many times, nobody has done more than good old Angela to drive the United States of Europe agenda forward. Magnificent stooge is Angela. Anyway, we might have information on that tomorrow when we do the Richie Allen Show live, the weekly show. Lots to talk about. Just before we look at the papers, though, just before we do, I've got to remind you, I'm sure you know, but I've got to remind you that on Friday, Theresa May gave what we were told would be a landmark speech, which would be statesmanlike and bold and lay out the UK's plans for Brexit. That's what we were promised. It was going to be brilliant. What happened? Well, what happened was that May said there should be a transition period of about 2 years after Brexit, during which time trade should continue on current terms. They haven't given a figure either, but because the UK gives a net contribution of about £10 billion a year to Brussels for sod all, it'll be about 20 billion. Now, EU migrants will still be able to live and work in the UK during that time, but they will have to register with the authorities under May's proposal. And the payment into the EU budget will continue for those 2 years, as I just said. So no Brexit until 2021 at the earliest, which, and sometimes we can go a little bit OTT on programmes like this, but it's treachery really, isn't it? People voted to leave. I mean, if any of this was real in terms of the rules and regulations, the European Union would have responded to Theresa May's speech and said, no, love. The rules say specifically and explicitly, the rules are explicit, that we have 2 years to agree a deal, 2 years from the date Article 50 is triggered. And the rules explicitly say there is no room for interpretation. You must have a deal then or you leave sans deal. Sans deal. So we're being laughed at. They're laughing in our fecking faces. Most people can't see it because they are gripped in the drama, aren't they? This drama I keep talking about. The soap opera. Boris and Philip Hammond at loggerheads. War. Dissent. Division in the party. No, they're not. They're best pals. They're millionaires. They've been mates or partners. You could say partners in crime for years. It's a soap opera presented as politics. And I was thinking this morning of that analogy I made before. It's the Truman Show. And you and me, we're Truman Burbank. We're unaware. Well, we're not. You and I are not. Most people are. But we're not unaware. But people are unaware. People, and the people are Truman Burbank, that everything we are told, everything we are sold, is carefully crafted and carefully scripted so that we think it's all real. So people believe that Bojo the Clown is at loggerheads with Philip Hammond because Bojo wants the hard Brexit, the real Brexit, rule Britannia, and all of that. But Boris doesn't give a rat's arse because he's an actor, reading his lines, a very well-paid actor. Very well-paid. Make the analogy with Jamie was talking on Friday about Morgan Freeman doing that wonderful voiceover about Russia and the danger presented by Russia to a free America. It's bullshit. Morgan Freeman and Boris Johnson are one and the same. Actors reading their lines. Let's have a look at the Sunday papers then. Very Brexit-centric today. You won't be surprised. I promise we'll make it entertaining as much as educational and as much as informational. Because I know you're sick of it. So we'll try and do this in a way that doesn't have you groaning with boredom. The Sunday Observer, front page headline, Make Labour the Pro-Single Market Party, Corbyn is told. That's the headline. Make Labour the Pro-Single Market Party, Corbyn is told. I shall read you a little bit of this. The Labour Party are in Brighton. They're in Brighton. The story is, in the Observer, Jeremy Corbyn faces calls from across the Labour movement to commit to full and permanent membership of the EU single market and customs union so the party can offer a clear alternative to the Tories over Brexit. As Labour's annual conference opens in Brighton, more than 30 MPs, along with MEPs, Labour peers, trade union leaders and mayors, publish an open letter in the Observer demanding that Labour shows the courage of its convictions and toughens its pro-EU message. Brexit looks certain to provoke the most heated debate in Brighton as delegates gather in buoyant mood following the party's performance in the election in June. Writing in the Observer today, Corbyn says his party is now a government in waiting and urges all Labour members to, quote, use our new strength inside and outside Parliament to challenge the Conservatives at every step and prepare to form a new government, to change Britain whenever the next election is called. Corbyn adds, listen carefully, these are Corbyn's own words in the Sunday Observer today. He adds, our mission must be to work with the people of Britain to transfer wealth, power and opportunity to the many from the few. For the first time in a long time, we can provide a politics of hope and a politics for the people. But the EU has always been about raping and pillaging real wealth, hasn't it? And transferring that wealth to individuals and mega corporations using the European Central Bank and blaming austerity for it. So if you want to transfer wealth, power and opportunity to people and get it away from the tiny cabal, can't do that during the European Union. Some of these MPs who want Corbyn to get a permanent membership of the Single Market and Customs Union include puppets like Heidi Alexander, Chuka Omunna, and others, Clive Lewis as well, and, you know, the usual suspects. But lest we forget, here's a couple of clips of Corbyn way back when, back in the 1990s, and only a couple of years ago. You'll hear Corbyn first, then you'll hear Tony Benn articulating why the European Union is anti-democratic and ultimately how it destroys national sovereignty. Jeremy Corbyn and Tony Benn.
We have a European bureaucracy totally unaccountable to anybody. Powers have gone from national parliaments. They haven't gone to the European Parliament. They've gone to the Commission and to some extent to the Council of Ministers. These are quite serious matters.
I'm concerned about the way the European Union is increasingly operating like a free market across Europe, tearing up the social chapter, damaging working class and workers' interests across Europe, hiding tax evasion in Luxembourg and other places, and secretly negotiating a transatlantic... Can I finish? Yeah. Secretly negotiating a transatlantic trade and investment partnership. I think we as a party need to be making strong demands of defending and expanding the social chapter, defending and expanding workers' rights across Europe, and chasing down these approved tax havens that exist by the European Union all across Europe, and asking some serious questions about the way they've treated the people of Greece and other countries by their imposition of austerity measures on them.
Yes, back in the 1990s and a couple of years ago, Corbyn articulated that laws, rules, regulations and whatever, governance isn't decided by the members of the European Parliament. It's decided by bureaucrats, unelected and appointed. He didn't say this now, but of course, appointed to those roles, the Commission. Appointed to those roles by the likes of the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers and others. Tony Benn, this is brief, rest in peace, talking about what the European Union has done to sovereignty in the UK in terms of people going to vote for MPs to change things in their country but not being able to.
Are the British people, when they vote in a general election, to be able to change the policies of the government that has previously been there? And it is already a fact that whatever government is in power, our agricultural policy is now controlled from Brussels, our trade policy is controlled from Brussels, our industrial policy is controlled from Brussels. It is a democratic and not a nationalistic argument.
Yes, he's making a democratic, not a nationalistic argument, because when you made those arguments in the past, you were accused of xenophobia. So Brussels controlling trade, controlling industrial and agricultural policy. That was Tony Benn. Now, Corbyn, as I've said on the programme before, and it's not a cheap throwaway line, is a liar and a traitor. Who is he a liar and a traitor to? Well, to workers. You see, he says he serves workers, the proletariat. That's who he says he serves. He's a socialist, he says. And his deputy leader, Tom Watson, was on Sky News a short time ago. I didn't grab the clip. He declared himself to be a socialist as well. How could you be a socialist and be pro-EU? It's destroyed fishing, agriculture, steel and manufacturing in this country. It was designed to. He explained it in his speeches, didn't he? He's a traitor. Now, back to the present day. Corbyn, and I don't care, I know there will be people with disabilities, there will be people who are ill, people I would, and I'm not being melodramatic here, I would do anything that I could to promote the rights of people with disabilities and people who are poor and have got sod all, not to be treated the way they have been treated by the conservative government, by the conservative Lib Dem coalition government before that, and the governments of Gordon Brown and Tony Blair before that, I would do anything to stop people being harassed by PIP assessment hearings, having their disability benefits that they vitally need to stay alive taken away from them. I would do anything for that. And they'll be pissed off listening to this because they think Corbyn is the answer. He's not. He's a traitor. Now, he spoke a short time ago with Andrew Marr on the BBC. And I'll tell you why he's a traitor. I didn't want to get into this, but now I'm going to get into it. Okay? Because the European Union way can be summed up in a couple of sentences. Austerity inflicted on the people of every country in the European Union. Austerity inflicted on people to blame for money that is owed to the international institutions of the world and Europe. So alignment with the European Union is to acquiesce to the demands of the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, and the EU itself. There will never be money for those who need it most in society. Corbyn knows this. He's a traitor and a liar. That's all he is. He's vile. He's worse than Theresa May. Because he knows better. And there was a time when he said, and when he gave the impression that he knows better. So we spoke with Andrew Marr a short time ago on the BBC. As mentioned already, the Labour Party conferences in Brighton. He started off by talking about house building, needing, he needs two terms as Prime Minister to effect social justice reforms in the UK. Social justice, by the way, is a wonderful progressive term. It doesn't mean social justice. We'll explore that in future programmes. Blah, blah, blah. But we're interested in the European Union for now. So here's Corbyn with Andrew Marr today.
66% of your party members want to stay inside the single market. Will you listen to them?
Of course, I will listen to them. What I would say is that the important priority is to ensure that we have a tariff-free trade access to the European market. Half of all our trade is with Europe. I would also say that we need to look very carefully at the terms of any trade relationship, because at the moment we're part of the single market, obviously. That has within it restrictions on state aid and state spending. That has pressures on it through the European Union to privatise rail, for example, and other services. I think we have to be quite careful about the powers we need as national governments.
I want to ask you more about the single market, but you mentioned state aid. Can you give me an example of the kind of thing you would like to do that membership of the EU stops you doing?
I would have wanted us to intervene immediately on SSI Redcar when the steel industry was in a crisis at that time. The government claimed there were issues of state aid. We disputed that at the time. But I would also want to say that we would want to be able to invest in industries. Another example, the Labour government...
Parts of the steel industry.
If necessary, in order to make sure we have a strong steel industry as the basis of a manufacturing economy. But it's also about a mixed economy. It's about investment in new industries. And so, for example, I want to see a much bigger renewable sector. Look out here, you've got a fantastic wind farm in the sea out here.
Wind farms. Corbyn is a wet rag. He is... Corbyn is Hugh Grant's assistant in his bookshop in Notting Hill. That is Jeremy Corbyn, that fool that Grant keeps sending out for the coffee. That's Jeremy Corbyn. What a liar Corbyn is, and what a failed journalist Marr is. The United Kingdom government, the UK government, was prevented from bailing out British Steel, Tata and others, because it is not allowed to do so because of European Union regulation. UK Steel was destroyed by the EU as it was meant to be destroyed. Right? UK firms couldn't go, UK firms now, businesses, couldn't go to British steel manufacturers and buy steel from them. EU trading rules meant they had to put out a bid to European steel producers and, wait for it, companies who were selling cheap Chinese steel. Not steel they manufactured themselves, but cheap Chinese steel they bought that had been dumped into the European steel markets. That's why the companies failed. That's why British Steel is an absolute catastrophe. Right? And hilariously, late last year, very late last year, the European Union put a tariff on cheap Chinese steel, but it was too late then. It was totally too late. So the UK government were told by the European Union that it, the UK government, could not rescue an industry in this country, an industry that was responsible for the employment of thousands of people. Corbyn knows this. Devastation, or the devastation of UK steel production, was an EU plan. Corbyn knows it. He is sick, and he is sickening in his mendacity, in his lies. So on the free movement of people then, what did Corbyn say when Mara put that to him today?
Okay, a large majority of your own members want free movement to continue. Do you agree with them?
I understand what they're saying. I understand
the point.
Do
you agree with them?
Well, I understand the points they're making, and I understand the importance of workers moving from one place to the other. What I also understand is that there is an abuse of free movement by some employers who have grotesquely exploited some very low-paid workers. That has to stop. But we have to recognise that in the future, we're going to need people to work in Europe, and people from Europe are going to need to work here. There's going to be a lot of movement.
You say that the Prime Minister's not clear. You seem even less clear yourself as to whether most people, after we leave the EU, will have free access to this country or not. I understand the point about workers, but what about everybody else?
What, from outside of Europe?
No, inside Europe.
Well, inside of Europe, a lot of people are going to come and work here, and a lot of people from Britain are going to go and work there. There has to be an agreement on it and how it's achieved. Listen, go to any Airbus office. Go to any Rolls-Royce place. Go to any of those places. There are engineers coming from Europe on a daily basis and going back. All of that happens all the time. You can't stop that, and you shouldn't stop that.
He's sickening, isn't he? He's sickening, Corbyn. You'd love to get a hold of him. Give me a room with Corbyn for 30 seconds. This is not about high-paid workers and engineers from Europe working for Airbus and Rolls-Royce. This is about hundreds of thousands of people, unskilled, coming into this country and taking jobs that belong to unskilled UK workers and taking those jobs for a pittance. And the failure that is Andrew Marr doesn't stop him and say, this is not about the massive jobs at universities, the jobs developing graphene in Manchester, where the people coming from European universities are getting 90, 100, 150,000 pounds a year. You tweed jacket, elbow patch wearing bastard, Corbyn. These are jobs in shops. These are jobs in call centres. These are jobs in supermarkets. These are jobs on the high street. These are manual labour jobs. How could he say that he's for the working people, for the proletariat? He's a fucking prole pretender. He knows damn well that free movement of people results in poverty for UK-born and bred people. And I don't care whether the UK-born and bred man or woman is black, brown, blue, green, fucking yellow. Race has nothing to do with it. This sickens me, this. It really does. He knows that free movement of people has destroyed people's lives in this country. He knows this. But you know, he's not calling the shots. People like Keir Starmer are calling the shots in the Labour Party.
That, and you shouldn't stop that.
OK, when it comes to the overall relationship with Europe, we're going to be pretty close. In terms of the transitional deal, the Conservatives have picked up the idea of staying inside the customs union and staying inside the single market for 2 years. After that period, do you want to stay inside the customs union?
I think you have to stay in a transitional period as long as necessary.
You got to stay in a transition period as long as necessary, says Jeremy Corbyn. I'm leaving. I'm done with Corbyn. For today, anyway. He goes on to mention Keir Starmer. I can't listen. Go on then, because he does mention Starmer. Let's have a listen, because he does mention
Starmer. Could that be 10 years?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's impossible for anyone to put an absolute figure on that. I'm not quite sure where this two-year figure came from. Yes, there has to be transition. We made that clear. Keir Starmer made that clear in the articles and statements that he wrote in August.
Yeah, Keir Starmer's calling the shots. If you thought Labour was the party of the working people, it's progressive bullshit. He's a fraud. We're not leaving the European Union. A transition period means in black and white that we are not leaving the European Union. Not now, not ever. We fucking warned you. We warned you. The Richie Allen Show and the good people at davidicke.com warned from day one. The referendum result was one thing. Getting them to honour the result of the referendum was going to be another. On the transition period, on the speech by Theresa May on Friday, here's former UKIP leader Nigel Farage.
As far as the transition period's concerned, well, let's be clear, we didn't vote for a transition period. You know, all these arguments about cliff edges, all the things that Goldman Sachs tell us we should be thinking, that was settled in the referendum. We voted to leave, and it's now going to be a minimum of 5 years before we leave the European Union. And I wouldn't be surprised if this woman's still in charge if we don't get to 2021 and be told we need 2 or 3 more years.
Of course we will. We'll never go. It's the Eagles song. You can check out any time you like, but you'll never leave. We'll never leave. And here's the irony, right? This is serious stuff. I know people are sick to death of hearing about Brexit and the European Union. This is the biggest, you know, the biggest single political issue of this time. It's huge. The European Union has always been about centralisation of power, about destroying sovereignty, about imposing mass poverty through the Hunger Games society on the peoples of Europe. It's the biggest stepping stone towards a one world government. It is vital that it is destroyed. It really is. And for many people, the Brexit Secretary David Davis was the man they clung on to. So many people who voted to leave clung on to David Davis because he comes across as being very sincere. He comes across as being resolutely committed to leaving, full stop. David Davis has said no single market, no customs union. Leave. He's the last guy. He's the last hope. Well, we did warn you on this programme, and the good people of davidicke.com have warned you. Here's David Davis.
Okay, let's look again at the big picture, if you might. March 2019, we leave the EU.
Yeah.
But if you look around in March 2019, when it comes to free movement of people, when it comes to the amount of money we're paying into the EU, and it comes to EU regulations, not much will have changed. You won't be able to spot any great difference.
The purpose of the implementation period is to give people time
so that's
to
true.
Adjust. Right. Take the free movement issue, and this will, I'm sure this will be controversial. We'll be debating this in the negotiation. But what we've said is, we want registration. We want to register people who come.
And they've said no already.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll get to that point when we actually negotiate the implementation period.
So we are going to register every non-British EU citizen living here, or just people coming in for the first time. And they're going to have to sign up. The EU says that is against European law because it is discriminatory.
We'll be outside the European law by then. So this is a question of negotiation, and maybe comes under the arbitration we talked about before. But that's the intention.
All right, let's talk about the big picture when it comes to sort of trade and so forth. There seems to be a real problem between those people who want to stay as close as possible to the EU to get frictionless access to the markets, if you like, to be part of the EU's magnetic force field, and those who say, no, we want to break away completely and look at the rest of the world. Where on that spectrum are you?
Oh, I'm bang in the middle, I should think.
Boring.
I thought you'd think that. Look.
He's bang in the middle. He's now bang in the middle. He was once firmly committed to leaving the single market and to leaving the customs union. He's now bang in the middle. It's over. We won't have a Brexit. The pro-BBC, or the pro-EU BBC even, I should say, are cheerleading this. It's the establishment's propaganda wing. And they brought Nick Clegg, the former leader of the Liberal Democrat Party, on to the same programme today. He's a nobody, Clegg. In a nobody party, he lost his own seat at the last general election. He's a nobody. So why are they bringing him on? Well, Clegg is being brought on because Clegg is now suggesting, and this is gathering pace, that next October we see where we are with the negotiations and we have a vote to basically stop negotiating with the European Union and to stay in the EU itself. This is Clegg. From the farcical Lib Dems, he was on Andrew Marr today.
Assuming your view, I still don't understand at all how you can possibly stop Brexit. It's going to happen. It's going to happen in March 2019. We'll be out.
Not at all. If MPs say in October of next year, 2018, so several months before we legally leave, and they say, look, we don't think that the deal that the government has come up with in any way measures up to what our constituents were promised, at that point, yes, of course, there'll be turbulence, there'll be crisis in Westminster.
So first of all, you have to have a vote October on the deal itself.
Correct.
And at that point, MPs have to vote the deal down.
Yeah, and I think
they're
not
there yet.
No, they're not. Of course not. And by the way, they're not reasonably there yet. So I can write a book to sort of, as a sort of advance guard of the argument. They're not there yet because quite reasonably, a lot of MPs, either those who voted for Remain or voted for Brexit, either those who have Brexit voting or Remain supporting constituencies, want to give the government the time to come up with something. And at that point in October, for the first time since the referendum, they will be able to compare what their constituents get with what they were promised.
And so I think your plan depends upon two things. First of all, the economy going further south. We've seen Moody's downrating the British economy already this week on the basis of Brexit. But more bad news like that. And then MPs, frankly, panicking about the nature of the deal that David Davis has
negotiated. I think the damage to the economy is self-evident, but I actually think there is a more profound political and democratic principle. If you are told that you're going to get this great panacea of goodies by Brexiteers and none of them are delivered, then surely MPs are duty-bound to say, I'm sorry, you haven't done what you told my constituents they would get, therefore we need to revisit it.
This is assuming your view,
It's playing again for some reason. This is laughable from Andrew Marr. Laughable. He challenges Clegg on nothing. Clegg has made a spurious claim there that the damage to the economy since Brexit is self-evident. It isn't. There is no evidence that there's been a catastrophic downturn in the economy since the June referendum last year. Marr doesn't challenge that. Marr himself brings up credit agency Moody's, which downgraded the UK economy last week and blamed Brexit for it. But Moody's is a puppet of the European Central Bank. Right? Of course Moody's is going to come out with all manner of garbage about the economy going south. Now, Andrew Marr as a presenter shouldn't be rude. It isn't his job or his place to be rude. It's not your job to insult your guests. However, it's up to Marr to deal with the facts. Marr, as a objective presenter, should say to Nick Clegg, but who are you, Mr. Clegg? Nobody cares about you or your party. You were destroyed in the last general election. Destroyed. And it's outrageous of you to be suggesting that there's a vote next October for MPs to basically tear up the democratic will of the people and stop the process and stay in the European Union. Of course, Marr does none of that because the BBC is overwhelmingly pro-European Union. It's run by Europhiles. It takes money from the European Union, as we have pointed out many times on this programme. I said it, didn't I? I said it last year and I thought I was wrong. I still think I'm wrong. I said there might be a referendum in late 2018, that this will just go on and on and on, all this negative crap with no challenge to it, and sometime early next year somebody will say, listen, we need another referendum on this. You know, I could very well be wrong, because there's no need for a referendum if you're in a transitional period where you're not really leaving the European Union anytime soon. So all the papers have this today. The Mail on Sunday, the headline on the front page of the Mail on Sunday, Chancellor versus Boris, it's all out war. The Chancellor of the Exchequer is Philip Hammond. Boris Johnson is the Foreign Secretary, the former Mayor of London. And the narrative is, the fictional story is, these guys are at loggerheads because these guys have future designs on being the leader of the party. Hammond is for a kind of pro-EU type Brexit, maintaining membership of the market. Johnson is allegedly in favour of a complete severance. It's all out war, says the Mail on Sunday. This is garbage. You now have national newspapers in the UK behaving like celebrity magazines. I mentioned earlier, the drama, the soap, Boris versus Hammond, the war. I have a copy of Closer magazine here in my hand. I didn't buy it. The headlines are identical in these magazines. We're seeing the Sunday newspapers now, allegedly highbrow. Sunday Times, Sunday Independent, allegedly highbrow publications, right, copying the supermarket celebrity magazines. And the headlines are basically the same. Colleen tells pals, it's war, I'll never forgive Wayne. Cheryl tells Liam, don't pressure me into another baby. The Sunday Mail, Chancellor versus Boris, it's all out war. It's bullshit. It's nonsense. Idiotic headline on the Sunday Mail and a nonsensical story. Told you before, these guys are best pals. The Sunday Times joins in as well. Their headline, revealed. Plots by Cabinet's Big Four to seize May's crown. This is sensationalist tabloid bullshit. The Sunday Times joining the OK magazine, Closer magazine, in presenting garbage as news. Talks about how Boris Johnson, Philip Hammond, David Davis and Amber Rudd were all embroiled in leadership plots after May lost the Conservative majority in the last election. This is nonsense. Lies. The Sunday Telegraph, Boris sets red lines on Brexit. The Sunday Express, Boris, I saved Brexit. So it's mostly Brexit in the UK papers this morning, and it is mostly garbage. It's exactly 24 minutes to the top of the hour. I can't believe how quickly this is flying by, this episode of Sunday View. Quick break, back in a minute.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to Sunday View. It's 11:38 a.m. this Sunday, the 24th of September 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining me. Let's get away from politics for a minute, or for most of the rest of the programme today. It's a very interesting story in the Mail on Sunday. And the headline is, blasphemy, bishops blast at satanic London Fashion Week show that turned a church into a catwalk. And the story reads in the Sunday Mail, a bitter row has erupted after a fashion show featuring satanic designs was held at a historic church. Leading clerics branded the event blasphemous after models dressed as devils and vampires sashayed in front of the altar. The show, part of London Fashion Week, was highlighting the work of controversial Turkish designer Dilara Fındıkoğlu, whose creations have been worn by celebrities including singer Rihanna. Against the backdrop of demonic images, heavily made-up models wearing horns or displaying upside-down crosses paraded down the aisle-turned catwalk of St. Andrew Holborn Church in central London last week. Ms. Fındıkoğlu, who has been described as an up-and-coming rebel of the fashion world, told Vogue magazine of her fascination with the occult and magic. But the former Bishop of Rochester, Michael Nazir Ali, said the satanic aspect of the show wasn't acceptable and could lead people to areas where we don't want them to go. He said Christians will be outraged. This wasn't necessary in the sense that Christ's name is being dishonoured. It is blasphemous. The bishop said the general rule was that churches shouldn't do anything that dishonours Christ or contradicts the Christian faith. And I was thinking about this, and the photographs are all over the Mail on Sunday story. Who would buy the clothes? I can understand people going to novelty shops to buy fancy dress costumes, but nobody's going to buy that sort of stuff to wear, I don't know, to wear out on a Saturday or to wear out on a Friday night, you know. Faces painted with pentagrams, the upside down crosses, the horns, the symbols in a church. What's interesting is James Whale, the broadcaster, was on Sky News this morning, and he was there to do what I'm doing now, review the newspapers. He found it amusing. It's a big fuss about nothing, said James Whale. Interestingly enough, the main presenter didn't agree with him, Stephen Dixon. This is them discussing the Satanism in the church story, which a lot of people would probably think is a throwaway story and there's nothing to it, but there is. There really is. Have a listen to this.
It's the Mail on Sunday, James.
To me again, didn't you? Yeah. I just love this story. It's great. They've done a fashion show in a church, but a bishop has got very upset with this, apparently, if you believe in that sort of thing. Leading clerics branded the event blasphemous after models dressed as devils and vampires sashayed in front of the altar. How dare they?
Oh, I mean, but it's in a church.
Yeah,
it's
you
in
think
a church.
So?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can do what you like, but, like, it's a sacred space and people think it's sacred. At least.
You know what? I wouldn't necessarily object to that. And I wouldn't necessarily object to that.
Yeah, what would you object to?
But I do object... I have to say, I do object...
Yeah, go on.
...to that.
Mm. Yeah.
It looks pretty sinister.
A pentagon like that is actually a satanic symbol.
Yeah, and it's in a church.
Well, they're all symbols, for goodness sake. They're all symbols, whether they're Christian, Muslim, whatever that is. They're
yes,
all just
I know.
Symbols. I object to that because why would you do that to your face?
Well,
it's like people who tattoo their faces.
Question why you would hold a fashion show in a church. Yeah. In
well, I don't think, I mean, you know, people do. And listen, the church obviously thought they're making a few bob out of having the fashion show there. So it's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, they've rented the space out. They've
yeah, exactly.
It for nothing.
Exactly.
And again, your thoughts, please send them through. But no, that...
Pentagon. What's it? I thought it was
pentagram.
Just, I thought
pentagram.
It was what you put on the top of a Christmas
Star
tree.
Of David.
I didn't know that.
Really? I find that a bit
Star
odd.
Of David,
yeah, I've given Stephen Dixon, the presenter of that programme, some stick in the past, but fair play to him, he stuck to his guns there. There is something very wrong with that. And I think over the years in his books, David has often talked about various issues and said, when something is suddenly everywhere, there's something going on. It isn't coincidental. And we are seeing this everywhere in music, particularly in music, Jesus, in games, in TV shows and films. I mean, in music, it's extraordinary how many young, very successful performers, sadly, many of them women, feature this occult symbology in their live stage shows. It's just extraordinary. Nobody's going to tell me that all of these artists individually have come to the conclusion that, oh yeah, love that, that looks amazing, that, yeah. Yeah, I'll come on stage wearing the goat's head, the Baphomet thing, yeah, wonderful. So many of them do it. And you can't believe it's a fashion show to see people dressed like that. You can't imagine people wanting to go and buy that garbage, you know. So there's something going on. The pentagram, Stephen Dixon is absolutely right, it is a symbol. And anybody who's been to see David do one of his amazing 12-hour presentations, you will know that these symbols, they are communicating with you. They make a sound, whether you can hear it or not, and they impact on you, on your psyche, on what you think, on what you feel. And they are being blasted at children. So when something is suddenly everywhere, you have to stop and go, why? It's not like a fashion trend like, I don't know. I was never fashionable anyway. I tried to be when I was a teenager. I was always 2 or 3 years behind everybody else. But, you know, a certain jacket or a certain pair of shoes. It's not like that. It's something different when you see all of these pop stars using this symbology in their life performances. Good morning to Jen Crosby. Good morning, Jen. Very early good morning to Jen. Listening in the US in the small hours of the morning. Sent me a video about this fashion show. I've retweeted it if you want to see it there. Good morning, Danny. Good morning, Charlotte Binns. Good morning, Patrick Garrett. Patrick asked a good question about Brexit. Richie, when countries like Australia and India gained their independence, was there a transition period? Regards, Pat. Good question, Pat. And a fair question. Jason makes the point about Moody's. Moody's was one of the first, or was one of four ratings agencies that labelled toxic mortgage-backed securities as AAA back in 2007. Yes, they did, Jason. So you can take anything that Moody's tells you, not take it with a pinch of salt, just wrap it up and throw it in the bin. Paul Sweeney on the occult satanic costumes in the church says programming triggers. Yes. Karen in Glasgow says, always thought something had happened that made Justin Bieber run to the church. Might be way off though, just a thought, says Karen there. It is extraordinary. Mark tweets the picture of Bono on the Zoo TV tour. 1992 to 1994, Bono dressed up at the very end as Mephistopheles. Bono called him Mephisto. He had the horns as well. Yes, absolutely right. All those years ago, and I didn't realise, of course, what was going on. I went to see Zoo TV back in the day. I'm old enough to remember Zoo TV. David Mortimer tweets, Labour must choose the people or the single market. He's absolutely right. You cannot choose the single market and free movement of people and claim to be a party that represents the working class, because by accepting freedom of movement, you are destroying your own working class. This isn't conjecture. This isn't an opinion. You know, I always say, look, it's just my opinion. And what do I know? This is fact. This is fact. Cheap labour coming in from Europe has destroyed the prospects of unskilled, I nearly said uneducated there, which would have been a real faux pas by me. Education doesn't mean anything. But unskilled people, people without the piece of paper from the university that says you're important, they need these jobs that have been overwhelmingly taken by cheap migrant labour. Corbyn knows this, but I'm not going to say again what Corbyn is. Jigsaw tweets, many people fail to recognise the demonic forces all around us in society today. Yes. Moving on, couple of stories I want to cover, getting away from Brexit. Manchester United have asked for closed-circuit television footage to help identify fans who sang a controversial song about the striker, or the forward, if you're listening in America, Jen Crosby, the forward. Jen will tweet me now and say, you misogynistic bastard. I know what striker means. A controversial song about striker Romelu Lukaku. Man United fans were asked not to sing the song, but apparently yesterday some of them sang the song. So the football club now wants CCTV footage, presumably to ban the supporters from future games. The striker himself, 24-year-old Belgian player, very good player, hugely imposing athlete, strong, quick, very intelligent, big future in the game, Lukaku. He asked fans to move on from the chant on Friday. However, the chant was heard again yesterday. United said, "We will take further action against these individuals." Do you want to hear the chant? Do you want to hear the chant? I'm going to play the chant because I'm a rebel. This is the chant the Man United fans are singing about Romelu Lukaku. If you don't know anything about soccer or football or Romelu Lukaku, he is a black man. Okay? Just to put it into context, this is the chant.
He's a Belgian scoring genius with a 24-inch penis scoring on a goal.
He's our Belgian scoring genius with a 24-inch penis, scoring all the goals, bell end down to his toes. Those are the lyrics, right? And kick out racism, or kick it out. I've said this is racist, it's prejudicial, it's disgraceful, and it has to be stopped. Is it racist? You know what it is? It's a bit of fun, really. It's harmless fun. Are we to believe that people believe the old stereotypes, the old comments about black men having a larger appendage than white men? Are people that stupid that they don't know that it's just a harmless, funny song referencing an old stereotype? And it does nobody any harm, really. It might be immature, it might be goofy. You can argue that. But it's not racist, is it? And progressives are funny, aren't they? Because like the character Cole in the film The Sixth Sense, and I said this on Twitter the other day, they see racists. That's what a progressive is. I see racists. They're everywhere. Some of them don't even know they are racist. They need to be told. People who don't hate other ethnicities need to be told all the time that they do. You hate blacks, don't you? No. You do, because you sang that song. Song's funny. We sing it at football matches. We happen to worship Romelu Lukaku. He's brilliant. He's our best player. We're not racist at all. We're joking. We know he doesn't have a 24-inch penis, really. We know he doesn't. We know that his bell end isn't down to his toes. It's just a bit of fun, really. In fact, until the kick it out racism people who need to see racism everywhere. David Icke made this point in his video cast on Friday, which is well worth a listen to. David made this point. Without racism, they don't exist. They don't get funded. So they have to see racism everywhere. And ironically, Lukaku could be seen laughing at this chant in the past and applauding the fans who were singing it because it tickled him. You see, he's a very bright guy, Lukaku. Speaks a lot of different languages. Got a bit of an education behind him. Smart fella. He's very good when he speaks after the matches. A lot of footballers, when they speak after matches, they can't string two sentences together. Black, white and Asian. This guy's pretty smart. It seems like the anti-racism groups have pressured him into saying, let's move on. Previously, it made him laugh. It's funny. But if the progressives say that it's racist and it's harmful, well, then it's racist and it's harmful. And you better stop singing it, or we will look at video footage of you and ban you from going to watch football. Isn't that wonderful? 6.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Madness. There's news on George Hook. There is news on George Hook. Who the hell is George Hook, Richie? I've been on holiday. I've missed your show, Richie, for 3 weeks. George Hook. He's an Irish former sportsman, broadcaster, writer, who is famous for his punditry on rugby union. That's how people got to know him. And for a couple of years now, or more than a couple of years, he was a daytime presenter for the Irish national broadcaster News Talk, a talk radio presenter like yours truly, and he was suspended recently because comments he made about a woman who was raped after going back to a hotel with a former member of the British Olympic swim team. He was talking about it. You know the story by now. He said, rape is terrible. She didn't deserve it. She didn't ask for it. He said very clearly. He did, however, ask, shouldn't we have, a little look at sometimes at our own, personal behaviour? When does personal responsibility get discussed? Well, the hysteria was unbelievable. Everybody came out and said that Hook was blaming the victim. And I mean everybody, including his own colleagues. Talk about union. I said this before. I'm a union man, me. I believe in trade unions. I believe that any man who goes to management to ask for a colleague to be sacked when it's got nothing to do with them personally. It's one thing if your colleague, is bullying you or doing something to you that's wrong. But that's tar and feather stuff. I would tar and feather the bejesus out of the News Talk people who signed a letter asking that Hook be sacked. I would tar and feather the bastards. I wouldn't really. But I'd imagine it. So Hook was suspended for nothing other than saying, is it, okay to talk about personal responsibility? In other words, is it okay to talk about not getting so drunk that you don't know where you are? Here's the Independent yesterday, the Irish Independent newspaper. News Talk's decision to move broadcaster George Hook to a weekend slot following their internal investigation into inappropriate comments he made about rape has been met with backlash. So they've moved him to the weekend. They haven't fired him, but they haven't given him his regular job back. So they've kind of bottled it. The 76-year-old will return for a new weekend show later this year. He will not be returning to his lunchtime slot, High Noon. News Talk declined to say whether this will affect his salary. The station was also keeping tight-lipped on whether he will be paid for the three-month period he will be off air. They've also declined to comment on whether disciplinary action has been taken against him. Singer Mary Coughlan, who walked off air during an interview with News Talk host Ivan Yates in protest at the comments made by Mr. Hook, has said she is horrified by the decision. This is how mad the world is getting now. Mary Coughlan, an Irish singer, was on another programme with another presenter who didn't say what George Hook said, and she walked off that programme in protest at what Hook did. You see the narcissism I talked about at great length on Thursday? Me, 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 me. Fuck Ivan Yates, the presenter of the programme she was on. Fuck him. Fuck his producer and fuck the audience. I'm walking out of a programme because I'm disgusted by what George Hook said. The presenter's like, I didn't say it. Whether I agree with it or not, I didn't say it. Why are you leaving my programme? But Mary Coughlan is horrified. I'm horrified by the decision. All of my faith in News Talk has really gone out the window. They seemed to be coming to their senses last week and heeding what the public wanted. Did the public want that? Did the public want George Hook sacked? Or was it a bunch of hysterical narcissists? Identitarians? I don't think the public cared one way or another. Ms. Coughlan said, I will never appear on a News Talk show again. There is no place for people like George Hook on the airwaves. No, Mary Coughlan, you shit singer. You miserable fucker. There is no place on the airwaves for anybody who disagrees with you. That's what you really want to say, so why don't you just say it? There is no place on radio for those who say things that I disagree with. Well, you know what, love? That's why you've got 572,000 fucking channels through the TuneIn app. If you don't like what a presenter is saying, I say this to my listeners all the time, absolutely disagree with me. I'm not right all the time. I'm wrong most of the time. Disagree by all means. I'll read out your comments. If you can't bear to listen to me anymore, there's nothing wrong with that. Fuck off to another channel. There are millions of them. Go and find somebody who says what you want them to say and who never challenges your narrow view of the world. Go and do that. So anyway, News Talk have bottled it. News Talk have bottled it big style. He should have been returned to his daytime programme and the narcissist identitarian should have been told to go and take a running jump. And that was the end of that. But they didn't want to fire him, so they've moved him to the weekend. Right, leaving that, we won't be talking about that story ever again. And I'm going to leave you today with a massive story. It's in all the papers yesterday and today. The police have said, the UK police have said, if former Prime Minister Edward Heath was alive today, we would quiz him under caution on child abuse claims. Operation Conifer is going to publish its inquiry into Edward Heath on the 5th of October. They will reveal findings about 40 people who made claims of sexual abuse against Edward Heath. Chief Constable Mike Veal will author the report, which will say many of the claims against Heath are credible. And if he was alive today, he would be interviewed under caution. The Sunday Mail says this is an astonishing verdict of a 2-year investigation into the former Conservative Prime Minister. The explosive findings of the Operation Conifer inquiry into Heath, led by Mike Veal, will be made public on October 5th, and the claims span 5 decades. According to Whitehall sources, the government, Veal's report will say 7 of the alleged victims are credible and describe the exact same pattern of behaviour by their abuser. Remember, 7, 8, 9 years before Edward Heath died, David Icke named him publicly in The Biggest Secret and challenged Heath to sue him if those claims were false. David did this back in 1998. So they've basically said the claims are credible. If Heath was alive, we'd be going after him. Of course, what happened with Edward Heath was many of the people, many of the young boys abused by Edward Heath on his yacht, the Morning Cloud, were then disposed of by the UK intelligence services. This is a fact, it's not conjecture. And if people wake up to this and understand it, that it's real and that it did happen, it might have huge consequences for the overall awakening that we pray to Jesus, if there is a Jesus, will gather pace in the coming weeks and months. If people understand that the highest levels of government were raping and murdering children and that it was being covered up, it might bring about a massive change in consciousness in this country. Look, that's it for Sunday View. Thanks for listening to it. Thanks for tweeting it. I really appreciate that. I'm going to leave you and love you and speak to you again tomorrow live at 7 p.m. UK time on Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Thanks for putting up with this today. Until tomorrow, it's bye now. Leaving you with some Billy Joel.